Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome Cody. As usual, I'm your host, Cody, and today we are continuing our theme of awesome Stephen King books being turned, getting adaptations into TVs or movies. Not into TVs, TV shows, and movies. Haha, boom. So last week I talked about The Outsider. This week I'm talking about Dr. Sleep. I'm going to give you a brief history of what Dr. Sleep is, and then I'm going to break down the super convoluted, not convoluted, but super busy road to where we're at now, which is cool because something really awesome is being done with the movie version of Dr. Sleep, which is pretty cool, and I'll get to that in a minute. For the people who don't know, Dr. Sleep is a 2013 horror novel by Stephen King. It is a direct sequel to his 1977 novel, The Shining. So this one takes place many years later. The beginning of it, the prologue, begins shortly after the events of The Shining. Danny and his mother are recovering from their injuries that took place during the events of The Shining. They are greeted by their friend and savior, really, Dick Halloran. And Dick explains to Danny about this technique he uses. Now, Danny is way more powerful than Dick Halloran is with the shine, as they call it. But he has this trick that helps him not so much block it or control it, but help keep at bay certain elements of it, which those elements are ghosts that he sees that really bother him and hurt him. And part of this is he basically teaches him how to trap the ghosts and the visions inside a mental box and lock it away in his mind. And Danny does this, but he still has issues with the trauma that he had, a mental trauma as well as physical trauma, but mostly mental trauma he had during the events of The Shining that took place at the Overlook Hotel, and especially the woman from room 237. So as an adult, Danny follows in his father's legacy of being angry and alcoholic. He spends many years drifting across the United States. He eventually makes his way to New Hampshire and decides to give up drinking. He settles in the small town of Fraser, working first as the tourist at the tourist attraction, and then at a hospice and attending Alcoholic Anonymous meetings. It's a very interesting setup. It's very poignant because he was able to overcome what the one thing that his father couldn't do, which the reason he continued to drink. Obviously it's a trait that it can be passed down, alcoholism, as well as anger management issues. But he also uses the alcoholism to dull the shine. It can help him kind of neutralize it in a way as he's drunk. So that's basically the premise of, and there's more to it. I'll get to it in a minute, a little bit. I'm not going to spoil too much for you because there's a lot of cool shit in it. Stephen King, originally had this idea for what would turn into Dr. Sleep, the novel, the sequel novel to The Shining, the early 2000s, around I'll read you this blurb, this background of it, and you can kind of get to see what I'm talking about. King described the idea of a sequel to his 1977 novel, The Shining, on November 19th, 2009, during a promotional tour for his new for at time new novel Under the Dome. During the reading moderated by filmmaker David Cronenberg at the Cannon Theater, King said the sequel would follow a character from the original, Danny Torrance, now in his 40s, living in New Hampshire, where he works as an orderly at a hospice and helps terminally ill patients die with the aid of extraordinary powers. I think it's supposed to say his extraordinary powers, but whatever. Later on December 1st, 2009, King posted a poll on his official website asking visitors to vote for which book he should write next, Dr. Sleep or the next Dark Tower novel. He says, I mentioned two potential projects where I while I was on the road. One, a new Midworld book, not directly about Roland Deschain, but yes, he and his friend Cuthbert are in it, hunting a skin man, which are more like werewolves, which are what werewolves are called in the Lost Kingdom, and a sequel to the Shining novel called Doctor Sleep. Are you interested in reading either of these? If so, which one turns your dials more? We, quotes, will be counting your votes, and of course, it means nothing if the muse doesn't speak. So, the voting ended on December 31st, and Dr. Sleep won the poll, barely, over the win through the keyholes. So on September 23rd, 2011, Stephen King received the Mason Award at the Fall for Books event in George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia, during which he read an excerpt from Dr. Sleep. King finished work on the first draft early November 2011. On February 19th, 2012, King read the beginning section of Dr. Sleep at the Savannah Book Festival in Savannah, Georgia. The audiobook edition of King's 2012 novel, The Dark Tower, The Wind Through the Keyhole, which, again, it came out first, but that's because, you know, the muse has to speak. Released on April 24th, 2012, contains the novel's prologue, read by the author, which is obviously Stephen King. In an interview with Entertainment Weekly, King revealed that he had hired researcher Rocky Wood, which is a hilarious name, to work on continuity between The Shining and Dr. Sleep. One of the reasons it took so long, because he needed help getting, it's been forever since he wrote The Shining, I mean 1977 versus 2009, well 2013 technically. So he needed some outside help to help him with that. The story was partly inspired by Oscar, a therapy cat who allegedly predicts the deaths of eternally ill patients, King said. I thought to myself, I want to write a story about that. And then it made a I made a connection with Danny Torrance as an adult working at a hospice. I thought, that's it. I'm going to write this book. The cat had to be there. It always takes two things for me to get going. It's like the cat was the transmission and Danny was the motor. Boom. So Dr. Sleep was then released on, had a tentative release date in January, but was later released in March, right? Was it March? September of that same year. So September 24th, 2013. So for those who don't know, The Shining is one of Stephen King's seminal works, as most people say, and one of his most popular books, and it's so popular it was made into a movie and a miniseries, which I'll get to in a minute. So the basis of The Shining is a family, the father Jack Torrance, his wife Wendy, and their son Danny Torrance are living in Colorado. His dad is becomes a off-season caretaker at the historic Overlook Hotel in the Colorado Rockies. By the way, I'll go over the history of The Shining because it's pretty interesting. Real quick, I'm not going to go into super huge detail, but I'll explain about it in a minute because it's a really cool story. In the book, it follows Jack, who is slowly going insane while they're isolated to this haunted resort hotel in Colorado. He can't technically see ghosts, but they influence him, and then he starts seeing them. He doesn't see them directly like Danny does. Danny sees them quite a bit. Jack slowly starts to see some of them. He gets ghost drunk, which is hilarious, but it's more of a state of mind than an actual physical drunkenness. And he slowly starts to succumb to the homicidal desires of these guests at the Overlook. Meanwhile, Danny is being tormented himself by the ghosts he sees in the visions that he sees, and starts to pull away from his family, starts to not really, like, kind of sees his dad in a different light, but still loves his dad, doesn't understand what's happening. And then during when they first start, Danny meets Dick Halloran, who basically automatically knows that they have a connection through the shine, and kind of tells him, it says, hey, like, you're a pretty powerful kiddo. Like, if you ever need anything, you know, give me a holler, and I'll come from wherever I'm at. And so he ends up coming to save them at the end when Jack goes full nutso. So here's the history of what led to the making of Doctor Sleep into a movie, and how it connects the novel as well as the 1980 horror classic, as some would say, movie by Stanley Kubrick. First off, let me tell you about the Stanley Hotel, or the Overlook Hotel. So the Overlook Hotel is based on a real hotel called the Stanley, that's in Colorado. So basically, real quick, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version of it. It's like the third time I've used that today. The setting and characters are influenced by King's personal experiences, including both his visit to the Stanley Hotel in 1974 and his recovery from alcoholism. So basically what happens, him and his wife were on the road, and they needed to stay at a hotel, and they happened to see the Stanley. But it was at the tail end of the season when the weather turns real bad, and they close the resort due to the drop in temperature and the freezing weather and things like that, because it's freezing weather is a whole lot different than like regular ski weather. So this ski resort-ish area has to be shut down. But to keep the to basically go along with it, Steven and his wife were staying there, and it was like basically the last, if I remember correctly, was the last night before the hotel shut down. So there's very little guests there. And so they have this big, large hotel that has very few people in it. So as you walk, you essentially hear nothing because it's so big and there's not enough people to actually make ambient noise. I believe he said that your echoes, your footsteps die off very quickly. So there's no reverberation and there's no follow-up noise. So it's very dead inside the hotel. And he had a hard time sleeping that night. When he woke up early wee hours in the morning, he formulated the basic idea of the novel because he kept hearing what he thought was voices and the hotel making noises. And he basically formulated the idea for The Shining, and essentially wrote down the whole story, and then obviously expanded on it later down the road. So that's the basis of the origins of The Shining and the synopsis of the story. There's a lot more to it, but I'm not going to ruin it for you just in case you haven't seen the movie, the miniseries we'll get to in a minute, and or the book. The book I highly recommend because it's one of Stephen's best books he's ever written. I would put it right behind it for myself. So the film, released in 1980, produced and directed by Stanley Kubrick, master filmmaker, And it was co-written by novelist Diane Johnson. Doesn't matter who she is. She's written some books. She's not Stephen King. That's all I have to say. And I've never actually read any of her books, so I don't know how good she is, but she's not Stephen King. And there's a lot of debate whether or not The Shining is... Not that it's not a good movie. It's actually a tremendous movie for the time frame. Not, I shouldn't even say that. It's a tremendous movie for anything, but... The essence of it isn't all that it could have been, but also you're taking a 400-something page novel and trying to cram it into 2 hours or so. Actually, the movie is original running 146 minutes, so 2 hours and 26 minutes long. I don't know why my math took so long for that. But it's arguably one of the most iconic movies and adaptations of a Stephen King work, even though Stephen King himself did not like it. And I'll get to that in a minute. The movie itself did release with mixed reviews. And the reason why is because it's one of those, it's a very artistic movie. It's a horror movie. And it was different than it was a lot of times, but also it was different in good and bad ways. It was different because it's very artistic and actually has a very slow beginning for how much happens at the end. And that's because they ran out of time. But amazing visuals in the movie. Kubrick was definitely on his game. It was shot on newer technology for the time. Not the whole thing, just some scenes. They did some pretty spectacular, eventful scenes in it. They changed some of they changed a lot of how the characters did what they did. And I don't know why. I mean, there's so much more that happened in the book, to all of them. But, so Kubrick made this, it did well. People really enjoyed it. It more than doubled its money, at least in America. But Stephen King, the man who wrote the novel, was very critical of it. Let's see if I can find his quote in here. I know. Where is it? Did I read it on this one or did I read it on a different page? Oh, there we go. Response by Stephen King. Speaking about the theme of the film, Kubrick stated that there's something inherently wrong with the human personality. There's an evil side to it. One of the things that horror stories can do is to show us the archetypes of the unconsciousness. The unconscious, I should say, not unconsciousness. Unconscious. We can see the dark side without having to confront it directly. Stephen has been quoted as saying that although Kubrick made a film that memorably with memorable imagery, it was poor as an adaptation, and that the only adaptation of his novels that he could remember hating. So he's the only one he actually remembers not enjoying, not liking at all. So much so that Stephen then produced a TV miniseries that released on, was it NBC? ABC, which would then become later owned by Disney. Anyways, and in this, it was 3 episodes. It was a total of 6 hours or 2 hour long, essentially movies, TV movies. So 3 of them, that gave you 6 hours. Obviously a whole lot more could be developed and talked about and shown and things like that. One of the big things, and it's been forever since I watched the miniseries, and I was going to go back and watch it before. But it's been, I don't even know if I can find it anywhere reliably. But I have watched The Shining, the movie, more recently than that. Matter of fact, I want to say we watched it in theaters not too long ago, too. Anyhow, so the miniseries took a very large inspiration from the novel itself. It was the miniseries was written by Stephen King. He wrote it and he produced it. Like I said, it was it starred the biggest name would be Steven Weber, who played Jack Torrance. And actually was tremendous, if I remember correctly. Plus, he got like a bunch of nominations and awards or something for it, which I'll get. I think I'll get to in a minute. So, critical reception. Two major proponents for it was Ken Tucker from Entertainment Weekly and Ray Richmond from Variety. Both loved it. They touted the pacing was excellent and it had you had the edge of your seat. And just the way they did it without. Resorting to without having to any lulls where it just wasn't a good use of time. They did a very good job of managing their time, especially with the TV adaptation, because there's a lot of things you couldn't do on TV back in the early 90s or early 80s. Early 80s. No, it was 97. Why did I think it was so early? Anyways. Late 90s. Could have done a lot with it, actually. So that's the biggest thing. And Stephen King made an appearance in it as Gage Creed, the orchestra conductor, which if you know what it is, you'll understand it. So the miniseries wasn't loved by everybody. It was actually majority of critics considered it, the miniseries, inferior to the Kubrick adaptation, and often cited as the latter as a classic of cinema and masterpiece of horror genre. Don't get me wrong, amazing movie. It is a classic of cinema and is a masterpiece in the horror genre. The problem is it's a piss poor adaptation of the book. Here's the quote I was looking for. Not by Stephen, but it was a different one. Was it that one? No, wait, where's the one? It doesn't matter. The biggest thing is the adaptation was A, done by the person who wrote the book, so that really helped a lot. Granted, it was 20 years later, but he still did a much better job of capturing it. But again, you have 6 hours of screen time to develop the 400 and something page novel versus the 2 hours, and we'll say 2 hours and a half of movie. So there's a lot more character development you can do, a lot more world building and things like that you could do in the 6 hours, which you couldn't do in a third of that time. So that's a little tough to do. So that brings us to the film adaptation coming out later this year, November 8th here in the United States, October 30th everywhere else. Actually, I should say North America is November 8th, if I'm not mistaken. I think Canada is included in that. Everywhere else, it comes out the week before, which is October 30th. I don't know why there's a disparaging week between those two, but it was moved up originally from January, which is usually not a great month for horror movies, but the studio really liked what they got, so they moved it up 2 months and gave it around Halloween release, because it releases before and after Halloween, but it is in that time frame and it is very good. So this adaptation has a couple really big things going for it. One, Stephen King endorses the making of it. He actually talked with the filmmaker Mike Flanagan. Mike Flanagan, I'll get to in a minute who he is, because he's really popular right now, and as he should be, because he's doing tremendous work, and tremendous work in horror, which is fantastic. So what's cool about this is, it's got a really good cast, some very well-known people, some newer people you may not have heard of yet. One big addition when they got him I thought it was outstanding. Way to get it. And it's Ewan McGregor. Ewan McGregor, we all know who Ewan McGregor is. If you don't, you're living in a rock. Most famous for being Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Star Wars prequels, and is soon to be Obi-Wan Kenobi again in the Obi-Wan Kenobi TV show on Disney Plus, which I would like to tentatively call Kenobi, but they might have a different name for it. Anyhow, so he's done so many movies, but notably, let's see, list of notable movies that Ewan McGregor's been in. Bigger ones, we'll go lately. Oh man, so many. Oh, I forgot he's in that too. Actually, that's a cool one too. Doesn't matter. So he played Christopher Robin, the adult Christopher Robin in Christopher Robin, which is hilarious because like he plays the adult version of Danny Torrance, and they're both in the way sequels and stuff. Hilarious. Anyhow, he was in the live-ish action Beauty and the Beast. He was in Trainspotting, which is one of his best movies, in Trainspotting 2. He was in Jack the Giant Slayer, which I actually enjoyed a lot. Like I said, Star Wars, the prequel ones. He was in Angels and Demons. I forget, it was in Nanny McPhee and the Big Bang. Let's see. Miss Potter, Stormbreaker, The Island, which is a Michael Bay movie that everyone forgets about. It's actually really fun. Not a great movie, but real fun. Black Hawk Down, he was amazing in that. He was actually really good in Moulin Rouge. I don't actually like that movie, but he was really good in it. Let's see. There's some other stuff he was in, too. He was in Night Watch, which is one of my favorite vampire movies that nobody ever talks about because it never got finished. Because it's supposed to be a trilogy. Day Watch, Night Watch, or is it Night Watch, Day Watch, and then Infinity Watch? I can't remember what it was. But they're really cool. Russian? Yeah, Russian. Is that right? I could be wrong about that. I want to say it's Russian. Anyhow. Oh, he's also in Robots. I love Robots. And Big Fish. That movie is amazing, too. It's a Tim Burton classic that a lot of people forget about. Anyways, that's Hugh McGregor. He is amazing. And I'm so happy he's Dan Torrance in this one. I think he's going to be amazing. You have Rebecca Ferguson, who plays the main protagonist. Or antagonist, sorry. Antagonist in this. She's the bad guy. She's been a lot of things. She's in the last couple of Mission Impossible movies. I think she's going to be in the new one, too. But I know she was in Rogue Nation and Fallout. She was just recently in something else. Girl on the Train, right? Yeah, Girl on the Train. She's been in a lot of things. Well, not a lot of things. She started acting in like 2000 and something. But she's, the things I've seen her in, she's really good. She's in Dune. Shit, yeah. Okay, cool. I didn't know she was in Men in Black International. That's kind of neat. Anyhow, she's going to be, she's in it. She plays, well, let me get this right, Rose the Hat, who is the head of a group called the True Knot. I'm not going to go into the whole thing because there's a lot that goes into it, but I think they're going to do a really good job. I think Mike Flanagan's a really good guy. You have Carl Lumbly, who will be playing Dick Halloran in this. I'm going to be guessing he's going to be Dick Halloran from the early part, which will be essentially the book was the prologue, which will probably be the opening of the movie, which is a direct connection, and maybe even further in because they may establish it differently in the movie versus the book. But he'll be Dick Halloran from The Shining, the connection over. I forgot to mention, there's some really cool, Stephen King does a lot of inner weaving of his books and stories and things like that. Not only is the Doctor Sleep a direct sequel to The Shining, it has a link to It as well, because of interactions of some characters. Doesn't matter. It's very small, but it is cool that they're all kind of in the same same world. But you have Carl Lumbly, you have Zane. I'm gonna get this last name wrong. Zane McClarnon. Anyways, he plays Crow Daddy, who is the right hand man of Rose the Hat. So the right hand man of the bad guy. You have an actress. Well, you have a character that's played by two different people. Let me go back to it. So you have did they have her as a little girl then? No. She can't be a little girl the entire time. Emily Aileen Lind plays Snakebite Andy, but she's that shows her as a little girl. Oh, that picture is super old. No, that's, 2012. Oh, I guess it could be her. She's like 16 or 17 in real life right now. Okay, yeah, I guess that she could be the grown-up version of Snakebite Andy. Okay, that makes more sense. That picture is just like really misleading because it's from 2012 and she's a little girl. I was like, unless they talk about they show her as her little self. It does make sure it makes sense. She's more of a teenager because that's when bad shit happens to her and she turns evil. Bruce Greenwood, which I did not know who's in this, but it makes me super excited because, I like Bruce Greenwood. He plays Dr. John, who is the head of the hospice that Dan ends up working at. Cliff Curtis, who's been in a lot of things, but he's in it. He will be playing. I wonder. This page doesn't say it, but I wonder if his page says it. Because he plays a pretty recurring role. Yep, Billy Freeman. Yep, he does. He becomes a good friend and the guy who helps Danny essentially get the job where he's at in it. So those are the main actors. There's a lot of other people you probably notice in it too. But the newest trailer just landed, by the way, which I'll post on the website along with this post that goes up tomorrow. So you can watch the newest trailer. Because the newest trailer does – I can put both, I guess. But the newest trailer does a much better job of kind of giving you a link between the two. But Mike Flanagan, the writer and director, he's done a lot of things. I think he's actually tremendous at what he does. His most popular thing, if you go by what he's known for right now, is the Haunting of Hill House miniseries, anthology series now, that was on Netflix, soon to be The Haunting of Bly Manor? No, is that right? What's season two? I thought it's Bly Manor, right? I can't remember what it is. I want to say it's Bly Manor. But anyways, they're doing another one. It's an anthology, so it's not a connected story, but it does have some returning actors, which I thought was pretty interesting. But if you haven't seen The Haunting of Hill House, tremendous miniseries. So well done. So spooky. So well done. But he, Mike Flanagan, has done a bunch of horror movies. I think pretty much everything he has is like horror suspense. But his big one, so he had a Netflix movie released in 2017, another adaptation of a Stephen King book, Gerald's Game, which is tremendous as well. He had The Haunting of Hill House, which came out last year, as well as continuing on next year. Or actually, is it? No, it's not this year. It's next year. I'm pretty sure it's next year. And then, of course, he has Doctor Sleep. Before that, he had a movie called Hush, which I believe is still on the Netflix. It is about a deaf girl who gets attacked by a bad dude. I think she's deaf. Yeah, deaf mute. So there's that one. He did the Oculus movie in 2013. He did the sequel, Origin of Evil. Or I'm sorry, not the sequel. He did a short film called Oculus Chapter 3, The Man with the Plan. Then he did the movie, which is essentially the longer version of it. And then he did Ouija, Origin of Evil, which I heard is really good, but I never watched it. And then goes right into his other ones. Before I Wake was in that one he did too, right? Was that one the... I don't remember if I watched that one or not. Kate Bosworth, Thomas Jane. No, I did not watch that one. I should watch that one. Anyhow, that's Mike Flanagan. He's pretty awesome. And he's producing... Isn't he producing something else Stephen King related? Or is he going... No, he's not doing In the Tall Grass. That's someone else. Which I didn't talk about this... I'm not talking about that this time. I'm saving it for another time. But because that's a combo. I'm going to do a month of Stephen King co-wrote with, because I've read In the Tall Grass with him and Joe Hill, Sleeping Beauties with him and Owen, his other son. Then there's the Talisman and Gwendolyn's Button Box. Those are all, those are four. Well, I guess technically Black House and Talisman. That's two, because he did two of them. It doesn't matter. I'll get there eventually. Anyhow, that's Mike Flanagan. So, to wrap this up, I want to tell you about the cool stuff that Mike Flanagan's doing to connect the Shining novel and the film to Dr. Sleep. This is pretty cool. This isn't going to spoil anything. This is a really cool thing I thought was real fun. So, I'm going to read this real quick, and then that'll be the end of it. So, Dr. Sleep is based on the 2013 novel, a horror novel of the same name by Stephen King. The novel is a sequel to King's 1977 novel, The Shining, which I've already gone over. The 1977 novel was adapted into a 1980 horror film of the same name by director Stanley Kubrick. Again, I've gone over all that. King was very critical of Kubrick's film adaptation to the point where writing and executive producing a new adaptation with the 1997 television miniseries. Again, all the stuff I've already told you. This is where the cool stuff comes in. While the film Dr. Sleep is intended to be a direct adaptation of the 2013 sequel novel, director Mike Flanagan said that Dr. Sleep would still acknowledge Kubrick's Shining in some way. Flanagan said, "It is an adaptation of the novel Dr. Sleep, which is Stephen King's sequel to his novel The Shining. But this also exists very much in the same cinematic universe as Kubrick's established in the adaptation of in his adaptation of The Shining." He explained working with all the sources, reconciling those three at times very difficult sources have been kind of the most challenging. Sorry, I read that. It's fairly poorly written in here. At times very different, the sources. The sources have been kind of the most challenging and thrilling part of the creativity for us. The first he first visited the novel, then he had a conversation with King to work out adaptation of both sources. As part of the process, Flanagan recreated scenes from The Shining to use in flashbacks. He also avoided the horror film trope of jump scares, just as The Shining did before it. So, all those words that I messed up a bunch on, this is what he's doing. So, it is a direct adaptation of the sequel novel, Dr. Sleep, from 2013. It will also use visuals from the Kubrick movie, because the outside of the Overlook Hotel is actually the Stanley Hotel that exists in Colorado that Stephen King stayed at. The interiors were actually much different, and they were shot on a soundstage. Even some of the outside stuff was actually shot on a soundstage with just very small slivers of the hotel backdrop, which if you look at them, looked different. It's because they couldn't tie up the hotel for all the time. Because the only time the hotel's not being used is when it's freezing over and no one wants to live in that weather, let alone shoot a movie in that weather. Plus, it'd be really kind of hard to predict the not freezing to death in that weather. So what Mike's going to do is he's going to pay homage to the Kubrick classic, The Shining, but stay more true to the adaptation of the original book, as well as or the original book of Dr. Sleep, as well as tie-in stuff from the original novel, The Shining, to kind of meld the three things together and use things like having Dick Halloran in it, shooting flashback scenes, because I believe there's a young Danny Torrance, Roger Dale Floyd will play the flashback version of Danny Torrance in this one. Roger Dale Floyd. Well, that's weirdly weird because Danny Floyd was who played Danny in the. Oh, crazy! That's a weird coincidence in naming. Anyways, he'll play Danny, young Danny, as a child in flashback scenes, which they'll reshoot using set pieces and iconic scenes from the original movie as well as the original book, which I thought was really cool. So, because I love the book, I do like the Kubrick movie, and it's been forever since the miniseries. But, like I said, The Shining, the Kubrick movie, The Shining, has amazing visuals in it. Some iconic things that have been used so much so from so many different people, both in parody as well as homage to them. So I think it's really cool that Mike Flanagan's kind of bringing all the sources together. The book it's based on, the original book, and the Kubrick movie. So it's really cool, and I can't wait to watch it on November 8th here. Well, November 7th, technically, before I get the guys to go see it with me on Thursday here in the United States, and October 30th everywhere else in the world. But yeah, that's basically it for Dr. Sleep. Here's a cool thing, too. I think they're still doing it, and I think it's even going to be more popular. At the Stanley, you can do, and this might not be there, but in it, if you go to the Stanley and stay, there's a Dr. Sleep package you can get where you get a copy of the book, the Dr. Sleep book. And there's a channel on the hotel TV that plays The Shining 24/7, which I thought was pretty cool. But you can actually stay there. Unfortunately, the room 237 doesn't exist, if I'm not mistaken, in the actual Stanley Hotel. Because there's not enough rooms on the second floor. There's not 37 rooms on the second floor. I can't remember how many they said they were, but I do believe there is no room 237. I could be wrong about that, but I think it's what it is. There's no room 237 in the Stanley. But anyhow, that's for another day. Probably going to talk about that again. Bullshit. But anyways, yeah, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome Cody. I have been talking about Dr. Sleep. Let me grab my notes. Because you'd think they'd be in front of me, but I'm an idiot. And I put my phone behind me. Next week is The Stand, which I don't know too much about the miniseries coming up. But I'll do my research as much as I normally do, which is not a whole lot. And then the last week will be Chapter 1 and 2, which will be fun because I'm seeing it. As of recording, I'll be seeing it tomorrow morning, which is the same morning this will be available if you listen to, because our plans got ruined, but that's not neither here nor there. But I will be seeing it tomorrow, and then I will be giving you my opinions of it next week, or the last week, not next week, because next week is, as I told you, already is The Stand. But I will be talking about it come the end of this month. Put that back. Knocking stuff over. Anyhow, that's it. I've ran really long because there's a lot to talk about. But anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Again, I'm your host, Cody, like normal. And like always, as I end this, I like to say, let's be awesome.